Heidelberger Frühling Podcast. Heute mit
Emma Ashby,
Nathan Harrison,
two members of Stil Antico, a choir or a vocal ensemble? How do you define yourself?
I think we say vocal ensemble because of the way that we work, which is a bit different from a choir.
A choir is someone that would have a conductor, but we don't actually have that. We're democratic choir and we don't actually have anyone telling us what to do. And yeah, it can essentially be difficult in rehearsal sometimes, but actually sometimes it can be really rewarding not to have just one person saying what to do.
And how many are you?
There are 12 of us, three per part. So there's three sopranos, three altos, three tenors and three basses. And I'm one of the basses and Emma's one of the altos.
And where do you sing at home in England?
We generally rehearse in London. There are loads and loads of churches, and we tend to use one of the churches in the city in London. I mean, that's only for rehearsals. We quite rarely do concerts in London, but we do concerts anywhere in the world.
Anywhere. Who wants us, really, to be honest?
You call yourself an early music ensemble. What does it mean exactly?
For us, well, this is also to do with our name, Stile Antico, which is a musical term which refers to the old style of composition. And it was used by composers such as Bach to refer to this old-fashioned way of composing, which is the music that we love, which is polyphony, where each voice is equal. So that's what we think of as being early music. We have gone as far as Schütz, which feels very modern for us. But also we have had occasional commissions for us by contemporary composers.
The composers that compose for us, they essentially have early music in mind with the pieces that they write as well. So it's not just something completely different.
And that Stile Antico, that way of composing, comes from before Monteverdi time?
Exactly, yes.
It's very old.
Yeah, exactly.
And you are Antico. Young, modern people.
Youngish. yeah, but we love it. We've always loved it. There's quite a strong choral tradition in the UK, and a lot of, especially boys, but increasingly girls, grow up singing this kind of music every day, every week, in church choirs, chapel choirs. We feel like it's in our blood to an extent.
So if you are an ensemble of 12, does it mean that everybody in the ensemble has his own voice to sing in 12 voices?
Do you mean that some pieces have 12 parts in the music?
It really, really depends. There are some pieces that have 12 voices, and actually generally when we've had commissions, they tend to compose for all 12 of us. That's quite rare in the Renaissance period, but it's never as straightforward as soprano, alto, tenor, bass, you know.
Sometimes there could be cases where there's two soprano parts, but we only have three sopranos, so we would get the higher alto to sing the lower soprano part. Or there'd be cases where the tenor can sing the low alto part as well, just to get a better blend within the group. That's one thing I found singing with Stile, that we've created a way to be able to make a much nicer blend compared to just the soprano, alto, tenor, bass combination together.
I think the most spectacular hearing is if you sing in 12 different voices, because it's artistic. Nobody can imagine how this works.
Well, actually, that's quite an interesting point about hearing your neighbour, because actually the way we stand when we perform, we don't stand within our voice parts. We stand next to someone who isn't singing the same part as us. And that's partly to do with the way the music is composed. Every line is equally as important. It's not like the sopranos have the tune and the rest of us are in the background. You know, we're all equally important. So actually we like to be able to hear everything that's going on within the music. Yeah, in terms of the 12 voice thing, we're performing tonight in Stuttgart, and one of the pieces is by Praetorius, German composer, and that is in 12 voices, so it's sort of in three different choirs, so we sort of stand in three different places, and that does sound very spectacular when everyone's singing all together. Yeah, just impressive.
Like Monteverdi Marienvesper.
Yes,
different choirs in the church. Was this the time when the dissonances were invented? It's a part of that old music.
Yes, definitely a part, but it's also, we spend a lot of time during rehearsals whether those dissonances are actually going to happen during the pieces, because one person in the choir would really love it to happen, whereas another person is like, oh, no, I really don't like that at all. So there can be arguments sometimes, yes, about which sounds best, but I think we tend to agree sometimes.
Some of them are very clear, and actually Tallis, one of our favourite English composers,
Thomas Tallis,
yeah, he wrote a lot of that in his music. Sometimes the Flemish and Low Countries music, it's a bit more ambiguous. There's a bit of discretion for the performer as to whether we choose to do. It can depend on the context, but yeah, it is a great, when you get, it feels very juicy when you get into that kind of thing, definitely.
Now let us come to the program you will present in Heidelberg at the Heidelberg Frühling. It's a Spanish program. You come from England, and why Spanish?
I mean, Victoria is one of the greatest early music composers around, and we just love singing his music. Why specifically Spanish? I guess it's because he's Spanish.
The composer you sing is Tomás Luis de Victoria.
Yeah.
And he composed Tenebrae, that are songs to sing in the Holy Week.
Exactly. So, yes, this is a collection of Tenebrae responsories. Obviously, originally these would have been sung just in plain chant by monks, you know, way back when. But it's Victoria composed some polyphonic settings of these very poignant texts, and it tells the whole story from
the eve of Maundy Thursday through to Good Friday, then into Holy Saturday.
So it tells about the betrayal of Jesus with a kiss. That's how
the story.
The whole story, yeah. Yeah, and it ends with the stone being rolled over the tomb.
It's my first ever time performing this programme, whereas for Emma, it's probably been quite a few times I've been doing this, because it was actually your first performance?
That's right, it was the first concert we ever put on, and this was in 2001, I think, when we were all very young, fresh-faced. This is how the group started. We got together just for fun in the holidays, in the university holidays, and decided to put on a concert of music that we loved singing. And this Tenebrae Responsories was the first concert.
Die Profikarriere von Stile Antico begann 2001 mit genau diesen Tenebrae Responsorien, nachdem man davor nur in der Freizeit gesungen hatte. Wer ist der Komponist? Wer war Tomás Luis de Victoria? Geboren Mitte des 16. Jahrhunderts, gestorben 1611 in Madrid. Man sagt, einer der bedeutendsten Komponisten Spaniens. Sein Schaffen umfasst ausschließlich Kirchenmusik. König Philipp II. Hatte ihn in ein Priesterseminar der Jesuiten nach Rom geschickt, wo er 1585 eine Sammlung mit Kompositionen für die Karwoche veröffentlicht. Darin sind auch die Tenebrae enthalten. Das sind Gebete zu singen in den Nächten von Gründonnerstag, Karfreitag und Karsamstag, was perfekt zum Konzerttermin in der Heidelberger Peterskirche passt. Francisco Guerrero, der andere Komponist im Programm von Stile Antico, auch er ein Spanier, war etwas älter als Victoria. Diese frühen mehrstimmigen A cappella-Gesänge der beiden sind von großer musikalischer Schönheit und Transparenz, sie strahlen Ruhe aus und so etwas wie Tröstung. Zumal in der eindrucksvollen Interpretation durch die 12 Sängerinnen und Sänger von Stile Antico, einem Ensemble, das an die lange Tradition und hohe Qualität englischer Chöre anknüpft. Jetzt zurück zu Emma Ashby und Nathan Harrison. Was sie machen und wie sie auftreten. Ist das gesungene Kammermusik?
I think that's certainly what we aim for, and this is part of the whole thing about being democratic, not having a conductor. The way we stand in a semicircle, so we can all see every other member of the group, you know, like almost like a string quartet would be. And we try and make sure we're communicating with each other as much, if not more, than communicating with the audience. Yeah, that's definitely in the nature of the way we work. We think of ourselves as chamber musicians.
Do you go into archives and look for autographs to find new music nobody has sung before?
We do, to an extent, within the confines of our available time, which is obviously limited. But yeah, we do. We try to find lots of music by female composers, of which there is plenty, but it's quite hard to find.
Songs of Exile and Longing. a project examining contemporary experiences of migration through the music of John Dowland, a very old composer, a very old problem.
Well, it's exactly as you say. I mean, this problem has been around for hundreds of years and is still very real today. So we took the... John Dowland wrote seven Lacrimae. The first one he turned into a song as well, Flow My Tears, which is a very famous song by Dowland. And we thought, well, why couldn't they all be songs? So we commissioned somebody to write some poems, Peter Oswald. He wrote some poetry for us, and we set that to the other six Lacrimae, which were originally instrumental pieces. So Peter Oswald, the poet, took interviews from migrants and made them into poetry about their experiences of migration. And yeah, as you say, it's very poignant.
Actually, the concerts, they went really well because the audiences were able to engage more with the text and really understand the music. The music is quite hard-hitting, but it's a lot easier for the audience to feel that with the text with it.
I think we wanted to make people think a bit with this programme. We didn't want them to just have a nice evening, you know. We want them to think about the situation in the world, you know.
And was this a statement for more open borders concerning Great Britain?
Well, yes, again, a very real problem today. It's not a fun time for us in the UK at the moment. Yeah. In that programme, The Songs of Longing and Exile, we teamed up with an oud player, which is a bit like a lute. It's a similar instrument to a lute. So, and this oud player, Rehab Azar, she is a Syrian migrant to the UK. So she is bringing her own experience of that to the music that she plays within the programme as well.
Composition commissioned by Giles Swain, which also was essentially about refugees.
The text that Giles Swain used for this commission was inspired by this very famous photo, which I think was seen all around the world, of this young child who was dead on a beach in...
5 or 6 years?
Exactly. It was Greece, yeah.
It was in the Greek islands.
Yeah, and that sort of hit everyone very hard. And he used that photo to inspire him to write texts about modern-day migrants go through to try and get their lives.
So I think most of your performances are in churches, and churches are always cold.
I mean...
So how healthy are you all?
It's a good question. I'm actually not very well at the moment, but I'm not sure. Most churches are nicely heated, so there's not really much. There's only ever one concert that we did where I was cold, but generally they tend to be pretty fine. And I found that it's a sort of 50-50 chance whether you're going to be performing in a concert hall or a church, really. But you do aim to perform in churches.
Yeah. We'd always prefer a church because of the... Almost all the music we sing is religious music. So it feels like the right kind of setting, generally. But, actually had some lovely concert halls. I think churches... I think once you're getting into the performance, you don't worry so much about the cold. But I think the very coldest one we had was in Krakow in Poland. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, about minus 12 degrees centigrade. And that was very cold. We could see each other's breath as we were singing. But
And you 12, live in the same area in England?
Yeah, pretty much. I think we all live in London, apart from a couple of us who all live in Oxford as well, which is not far from London. It's just an hour on the trains, I think.
What do you expect of your concert in Heidelberg?
I don't think we've been to Heidelberg before, but I'm really looking forward to it. And this old university sounds like it could be very inspiring. And hopefully the sun will have come out and warmed up a bit by then. And we'll get some leaves on the trees and we'll all be feeling very happy, full of the joys of spring.